He had thought of Samson as a burden, as a symbol of his own weakness. He had never thought of Samson as a friend. But now he saw that it was true. He died for me. He didn't understand about Israel or the kingdom. He just died, without any idea what we were fighting about. Then, heedless of the master's weariness, forgetting everything but the guilt that had tormented him every moment since the day of the rescue, he poured out the story of Rosh, of the betrayal on the mountain, of Nathan's death, and the debt that Samson's sacrifice had laid upon him. "Yes," said Jesus slowly, "an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It is so written. We must repay in kind. But Samson has given you all that he had. In what kind can you repay him?" "By vengeance." "He did not give you vengeance. He gave you love. There is no greater love than that, that a man should lay down his life for his friend. Think, Daniel, can you repay such love with hate?" "It's too late to love Samson. He is probably dead." Then, as Jesus waited, "Should I love the Romans who killed him?" he asked with bitterness. Jesus smiled. "You think that is impossible, don't you? Can't you see, Daniel? It is hate that is the enemy, not men. Hate does not die with killing. It only springs up 100-fold. The only thing stronger than hate is love." The boy lowered his head, scowling at the floor. This was not what he had come to find. With terror, he pushed away the words that struck treacherously into his own weakness. When he looked up again, Jesus sat with his head bowed, one hand across his eyes. Every line of his body showed his urgent need to rest. Daniel felt a stab of conscience, but his own need was too great. He had to speak. "I don't understand," he pleaded, "but I know that you could save us all if you would. Master, why will you not lead us? There are so many, hundreds, thousands in Galilee who only wait for a word. How long must we wait?" Jesus did not seem to have heard. He did not move. Slowly, Daniel got to his feet. As his hand touched the latch, Jesus spoke. He had risen too and stood looking after the boy. "Daniel," he said, "I would have you follow me."
"Master!"
A great burst of hope almost swept him to his knees. "I will fight for you to the end." Jesus smiled at him gently.
"My loyal friend," he said, "I would ask something much harder than that. Would you love for me to the end?"
Baffled, Daniel felt the hope slipping away.
"I don't understand," he said again. "You tell people about the kingdom. Are we not to fight for it?"
"The kingdom is only bought at a great price," Jesus said. "There was one who came just yesterday and wanted to follow me. He was very rich, and when I asked him to give up his wealth, he went away."
"I will give you everything I have."
Something almost like a twinkle of humor lighted for an instant the sadness of Jesus' eyes.
"Riches are not keeping you from the kingdom," he said. "You must give up your hate."
Daniel felt himself trembling. He was torn in two. Before the appeal in the man's eyes, he felt the whole fabric of his life about to give way, and the very ground beneath his feet like shifting sand. He summoned all his strength to battle for the thing that was most precious to him.
"I made a vow before God," he defied Jesus. "Is not a vow sacred?"
Jesus looked at him steadily, with a look he knew he would never forget, full of sadness and regret and a deep loneliness beyond any reach.
"Yes," he said, "it is sacred."
"What did you vow, Daniel?"
"To fight."
Daniel stopped, remembering the night in the passage, seeing Yoel's face.
trying to remember the exact words they had spoken. Thassia's voice came back to him. "To live and to die for God's victory." A smile suddenly transformed Jesus' face, the old smile, radiant, full of youth and strength. He put his hand on Daniel's shoulder. "That is not a vow of hate," he said. "Go in peace, my son. You are not far from the kingdom." 22. The Bronze Bow. On the 15th day of Tishri, the Day of Atonement, Daniel stood in the door of his shop. Even so early, the holiday spirit stirred the narrow street like a fresh breeze. No one in the village appeared to be working. Pious Jews moved with dignity toward the synagogue, looking with disdain on the frivolous folk who took the occasion for an idle holiday. Voices and laughter sounded across the housetops. Yoktan squatted on the doorstep, gnawing at the flat wheaten loaf that Daniel had brought out to him.
"The apprentices have the day off,"
he remarked, eyeing Daniel hopefully.
"Go ahead, then," said Daniel. "There'll be little business today."
When Yoktan had scampered off, he turned back to his forge. Through the morning hours, he stuck dourly at his work, trying to ignore the tug of restlessness in the air. Once temptation had come from the distant mountain. This time, it came from the city in the plain below. At noontime, the sound of singing drifted into the shop. Daniel laid down his hammer and went into his house.
"Would you go with me to see Thassia?" he asked Leia. "She will be dancing with the girls in the vineyard."
He spoke idly, but half seriously too, thinking that her longing to see Thassia might tempt her.
"Are you going?" she cried now. "Then you can tell me about it."
"Will you go with me?" he asked again.
A cloud shadowed her eyes.
"Don't tease me, Daniel. But you will go, won't you?"
"I don't know,"
he answered, still trying to hide his real intentions from himself. "If I have time, I have to go to the city to take a lock and key to old Omar."
"Not in your old work clothes,"
Leia protested.
"I've seen people going by. They're all dressed up. Wait."
She ran to the chest and pulled out his clean woolen cloak and laughed at his half-hearted grumbling as she straightened it across his shoulders. He walked along the road to the city, holding himself aloof from the holiday travelers, his unhappy, forbidding face giving no one any encouragement. In Capernaum, as he might have expected, the house of Omar was deserted, and he left his bundle inside the door. He still told himself that he did not really intend to go to the festival, but his steps turned, almost against his will, toward the long slope of the vineyards. It was not hard to find his way. Voices and laughter drew him on, and he had only to follow their lead. Around one of the vineyards, the young men of the town had gathered in a shifting, animated ring. He saw at once that he did not belong here. Even in his best cloak, he stood out plainly for just what he was, a peasant and a smith. He dared not even approach too near to these elegant youths, with their gaily striped cloaks, their leather sandals, their carefully oiled and combed forelocks and beards. They knew each other, called out greetings, jostled and jested, while he stood awkward and angry and alone. Suddenly the merriment halted. The ring of boys tightened, drew inward. Daniel, who stood taller than most, craned his neck to see over their heads. At the other end of the vineyard, a line of girls wound slowly from the green booths, a weaving line of white-clad figures with wreaths of flowers in their hair and chains of flowers linking them one to another. The girls' voices, thin and high and sweet, floated among the trees.
"Look not, young men, upon gold or silver, nor upon beauty in these maidens. Look only upon the good families from which they spring, so they may bear thee worthy sons."
Still keeping well behind the row of listeners, Daniel watched the line weave nearer. Then his breath caught as he saw Thassia. He had never seen her dance, but he knew well that sure-flowing grace. He had marked it on that first day on the mountain. How gently she moved. Not like some others, striving to attract all eyes. Nor yet fearfully, like those who crept with downcast lashes. She simply danced, as though she loved the motion for its own sake, her head up, her eyes shining, her lips parted in a little smile as she sang. As she came nearer, he saw that from time to time she gazed directly at the line of men, not coyly, not boldly, but with searching. She was looking for someone, and suddenly Daniel could not bear to see her face when she found him. He was shaken with terror. In a moment, she would pass by where he stood, and those seeking eyes would find him out, standing there in his homespun garment with his soot-grimed hands and his bare feet. Would she go on, her eyes still seeking as they were now? Would she dare even to show that she knew him before these others? Or would she be ashamed? She came nearer, the line weaving and swaying. All at once, Daniel turned away, pushed through the line of watchers, and plunged down the hillside. He had gone only a short way when he heard her voice. Looking back, he saw her running between the rows of vines, the white veil floating behind her. She came to a stop, a little distance from him, out of breath, with color flaming in her cheeks.
"Why did you leave?"
she cried. "You know why," he answered. "I was a fool to come."
"I invited you."
"You did me no kindness." He saw the quick hurt that leaped, like the mark of a blow, into her face. "I know you meant to be kind," he stammered. "I'm glad I saw you dance. Now I can tell Leia." "Is that the only reason you came? To tell Leia?" He stared at her miserably. "You should go back to your friends," he said. "You belong with them." Thassia moved forward, slowly, until she stood quite close to him. "Do you still think I am just a pretty child, Daniel?" He flushed wretchedly. So she had remembered. As he stared at her, the lips that spoke the words trembled, and the dark eyes had a bright sheen of tears.
"No!"
he blurted. The truth wrenched out of him in a headlong need to make amends. "I did not mean it even then. That day, when I woke in the passage, it was a woman's face I saw. The one face I will always remember, as long as I live." Thassia did not speak. She stood, straight and proud, with her face lifted to his, and did not try to hide from him what his words had done. The deep shining happiness was like a lighted lamp, glowing brighter till it threatened to blind him.
"Don't, Thassia," he choked. "I never meant you to know."
"Why not?"
"Because it's no use. I ask only one thing of life. I have no right to the things other people have."
"Is this thing worth so much? Are you sure, Daniel?"
"I have taken an oath."
He watched the light waver and die down.
"I took the vow too," she said. "We vowed to live and die for God's victory. There is more than one way of fighting. Yuel sees that now."
"I only know one way to fight," he said. "I don't have words like Yuel's. I have only my two hands." Her voice broke.
"Will there never be an end to it? The hate and the killing?"
"Thassia," he burst out, "don't torment me. I have to see it through alone. There's no room for anyone else."
She did not speak again. She stood still, taking this truth as she had taken the other, with her head lifted, not trying to hide the hurt any more than she had hidden the happiness, wrapped in a sort of pride that made the ordinary pride of women seem silly.
"Let me go now, Thassia."
She nodded.
"God go with you," she said. "Whatever you do."
He looked back once and saw her still standing on the slope, looking after him. He walked the miles back to the village as he had come, aloof from the others, protected behind his dark scowl. He was weary and sore in spirit, and he did not want to talk about the festival. But the moment he saw Leia, he knew he could not escape. She waited like a good child, her hands folded in her lap, her blue eyes eager.
What was it like? Did Thassia look pretty? What did she wear?
Some sort of white thing, Daniel answered indifferently. Then, looking at his sister, he felt through his own hurt a fresh pain at the thought of her waiting here in this dingy room while the other girls danced in the sunlight. The least he could do was tell her. They had flowers in their hair, he began with an effort. Then, on an impulse, he stepped outside the door and pulled up a handful of cockle blossoms that had sprung up by the house, looped them into a garland, and set them on the golden hair. Like this, he said. Enchanted, Leia put up her hands to touch the flowers. Then they formed in a long line and danced.
This way?
Leia began to sway from side to side, lifting her feet, her arms raised over her head. Astonished, he watched her. How could she know what it meant to dance? Those untaught motions had an instinctive rhythm. Surprised out of his own gloom, he actually smiled at her. You should have danced with them, Leia. You're as pretty as any of them. She stopped dancing and stood in front of him, her blue eyes grave.
Am I pretty, Daniel?
That he, of all people, should have been asked such a question twice in one day. The memory of Thassia's glowing beauty made him answer his sister very gently. Indeed you are, Leia.
Truly, Daniel? As pretty as those girls you saw today?
Much prettier than most of them. He had meant to please her, but he was surprised that his answer should seem so important to her.
Thassia said so too,
she said seriously, thinking this over as though it were something she had never before considered.
Do you think perhaps someone else might think so? Not just you and Thassia?
You all said so too. With a little smile, she dismissed Yoel.
He is kind, like Thassia, isn't he?
She said, her thoughts elsewhere. Then she made one of her surprising turns to the practical.
Your supper is ready, she said. I have a surprise for you.
The mat was already laid out for him, and he saw that he would have to eat however little he wanted to. With the garland still in her hair, Leia unwrapped the bread and set out the bowl of boiled carrots and onions. Even in his own preoccupation, he noticed the trembling eagerness with which she watched him eat, like a child brimming with a secret that can scarcely be contained. When the vegetables were finished, she went behind the curtain in the corner. She brought out a woven basket of fruit. He saw at once that it was very fine fruit, sleek scarlet pomegranates, plump juicy figs, the sort of fruit that no Galilean ever kept for his own table, and only once a year dared to reserve for the sacrifice of first fruits at the temple in Jerusalem. What neighbor could have brought such a gift? Is this payment for your weaving? He asked her.
No,
she said, breathless with pleasure.
It was a present for me.
He waited, puzzled.
Marcus brought it today.
His teeth, already sunk into the first luscious bite, stopped, as though he had struck a rottenness. Who is Marcus?
You know, the soldier who comes on the horse.
He sent the pomegranate spinning across the room. He heard the sickish splash as it flattened against the wall and saw the basket rolling from his vicious kick. He was on his feet, half blind and shaking. With a wail, Leia went down on her knees, scrabbling on the floor for an orange, sobbing, trying to wipe it against her dress. He snatched it from her hand.
How do you know his name?
He shouted.
How dare a Roman dog bring you anything?
Leia cowered against the wall.
Answer me! How do you know him?
He reached out, gripped her shoulders, and held her up. Without a sound, Leia drooped. He heard his own voice, shouting words he had never used before. Words he had heard in the cave. Then slowly the whirling blackness slowed down, and his sight began to clear. In the center of the blackness he saw his sister, shrinking under his hands. The garland of flowers slipped sideways on the streaming golden hair, her white face averted, waiting for his blow. His hands unclenched, and let her fall. Shamed, he stood back. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said more quietly. "Answer me. What has this man done?" Faintly, her voice came from under the screen of hair.
"He has been my friend."
"How long?"
"Since last summer. He has come to see me when you were gone away."
He held himself rigid. "You have let a Roman come into my house?"
"No. No, he has never come into the house."
"What then? Tell me."
He sits on his horse outside the garden wall and talks to me."
"Only that? You give me your word?" She raised her head and looked at him with such a strange dignity that he backed away. "What does he talk about?"
"He doesn't know many words. He tells me about his family. They live far away in a place called Gallia. He lives in a little village with a forest all around it. His village was conquered by the Romans. He has a brother and two little sisters, and they all have yellow hair like mine. I wanted to tell you, Daniel. So many times I wanted to. But whenever he came to the shop, when you even thought about him, your face was so black. I was afraid."
"You should have been afraid. I would have torn his tongue out. I will yet when I find him." Her face went gray.
"No. Oh, no."
Suddenly, she flung herself at his feet.
"Don't harm him. Tell me you won't harm him. Oh, if you hurt him, I will die."
He looked down at her, loathing her. But he knew that she had told him the truth. The Roman had not come into his house. "Stop groveling and listen to me," he said cruelly. "If I do not kill him, you must never speak to him again."
"No, never."
"You must give me your solemn word."
"I do. I promise anything you say."
"You will not show yourself where he can see you."
"No, I will never go out into the garden again."
"You have brought shame on my house and on Simone's house and on our father's name. On the name of Israel, even." She began to sob again. "Weep!" he railed at her. "Weep your silly tears. See if you can cry your shame away." He turned blindly toward the door, wanting only to be out of sight of her. She lay with her head against the earth floor, her face hidden. For an instant he wavered. Then he remembered something. When was it? On a summer day. She had said,
"He is homesick." Even then.
All this time she had deceived him. He plunged through the door and out into the street. For hours he walked, rushing through the village streets, trampling the pastures on the slopes, striding along the road, drenched by intermittent rain. At first, he had some wild thought of finding the Roman. For most of the night, he did not really know where he went. As the first pink streaks of light streamed up in the sky, he turned back toward the village. He was exhausted and empty, and his shoulder throbbed with pain. He had walked out the fierce anger that had driven him. Now, in its place, shame flowed in. It was a good thing he had not met a legionary in the night. He might have brought down a reprisal on the whole village. Now that his head was clearer, he saw that in spite of his bitter loathing, no one else would recognize his claim to vengeance. The Roman legion had its own laws, as strict as those of the Jews. But it was unlikely there was any law, either Roman or Jewish, that said a Roman legionary could not speak to a Jewish woman over a garden wall. What did Rome mean to Leia? She had seen a boy, scarcely older than herself, with yellow hair like her own. But why hadn't she been afraid?
I shouldn't have shouted at her, he thought with shame. I will try to make it up to her. I will show her that she does not need to be afraid of me. But let that Roman never set foot in his shop again. The house was very quiet. On the floor of the room, the spilled fruit lay in the dust. Leia sat in a corner, a wilted blossom still clinging to her hair. When Daniel came in, she did not raise her head.
23. The Bronze Bow. In a few moments, he had undone the work of months. Overnight, Leia had become again the wan ghost who had cowered beside her dying grandmother. She did not comb her golden hair, or sweep the floor, or speak. She did not seem to recognize her loom. All day she sat with her head bowed and her hands idle. It was as though everything that had happened since the day of Daniel's homecoming had never been, except that one thing had changed. Now, above all else, she feared him. In a torment of remorse, Daniel did all the work about the house, the sweeping and washing and baking. He steeled himself against her constant trembling and the cringing whenever he came through the door. When she refused to notice her food so long as he was in the room, he left the bowl on the mat beside her. Sometimes, when he returned, it was half empty. More often, it was untouched. He pleaded with her very gently. He was more patient than he had ever imagined he was capable of being. But her eyes, when he glimpsed them rarely, were like empty windows. He dreaded to look lest he should see the demons staring out of them. He was sure now that they possessed her completely. Just when the hope of Jesus began to work in him, he did not know. It began as a small flicker in the darkness of his mind. All day at the forge, the hope grew slowly, till it filled his every thought. They said that Jesus could cast out demons, demons so terrible that they made a man tear his own flesh. Could he cast out the silent demons too, those that hid themselves deep in the shadows? Could he ask anything of Jesus when he had refused to follow him? And did he dare to ask Jesus to help Leia when he knew in his heart that he himself was to blame that the demons had come back? Yet he remembered how Jesus, in a way he had never understood, had somehow lifted from him the terrible weight of Samson's death. If only he could take to Jesus this heavier burden of guilt. In the sleepless hours, he forgot the doubts that had confused him that night on the rooftop. He remembered only the infinite kindness of the teacher's eyes. He did not think that Jesus would turn him away. There came an afternoon when his mind was suddenly made up. He laid down his hammer and took the road to Capernaum. He reached the city toward evening and made his way at once to the shore. The fishing boats were deserted. A single aged man, his crutches beside him, stared out over the water.
"They have all gone," he whined. "Not a thought for us who couldn't walk."
"Gone where?"
"Who knows?" the man sighed. "They have been gone all day. They followed the master, a great crowd of them. He went out in the boat, and Andrew rowed him across the lake. The people ran after him along the shore, hundreds of them. I couldn't keep up."
"Which way?"
"To the west, toward the plain."
Daniel hurried away. He was in no mood to wait, especially in this dismal company. He would go out to meet the returning crowd. For the first time, he understood why they had refused to be left behind. This time, he wanted something himself, and he knew their impatience. It was not hard to follow the route they had taken along the rocky shore path. He began to realize, as one excited person after another pointed the way, that a very large crowd had passed by, and that many along the shore must have dropped their work and followed after. He saw before him a barren rise of hills. The light was failing fast, but he could just distinguish a great mass of people, more than he had ever seen before in one place,
clotted like a vast herd of sheep on the slope. What were they doing there so late? Presently, the sound of their voices reached him like the roar of the sea in a storm, louder and louder, swelling wave on wave. The master must be through speaking, for no one could possibly make himself heard over such a tumult. Above the roar, he caught an occasional scream, hysterical, high-pitched. He had never heard a sound quite like this. His heart began to pound. He caught up finally with the rear of the crowd. They were all on their feet, pushing, shoving, craning their necks with a frenzy he had never seen before. Up ahead, their voices rose in a sort of chant. "What is it?" He caught the arm of the man nearest him. "Why are they shouting?"
"Why? Where are your wits, boy?"
"I've just come. Tell me."
"It's the Messiah. Listen."
As he grasped the words, his heart gave a great leap.
"Hosanna, blessed be he that cometh."
Over and over, over and over.
"It is the day of the Lord,"
screamed a voice above all the rest. "He has declared himself," Daniel thought with rapture, forgetting Leah, forgetting his exhaustion and doubt, forgetting everything but the fierce joy that shook him from head to foot.
"Did he tell you?"
he demanded, still clutching the man's arm. "Tell me, what did he say?"
"Say? He did better than say. He fed us. Don't you see the bread? Pick some up for yourself. There's plenty."
The man shook himself loose.
"Praise be!"
he shouted, pushing forward.
"Salvation has come!"
Daniel looked down. He saw a glimmer of white on the ground and stooped to it. Bread. He held it in his hand. Farther on, he saw another crust and another. Bread? For all these people? People all over the hillside? There must be thousands.
"Wait a minute!"
He ran after the man.
"Where did the bread come from?"
"How do I know? All I know is they sent back word for us to sit down. Then someone passed me bread."
The shouting was growing more frenzied.
"Let him be king!"
they screamed.
"He is our deliverer! Down with Rome!"
Still, Daniel could not see Jesus. He began to push his way through the jostling bodies. If only Yoel were here, he thought with sharp regret. The end of all their waiting, and Yoel was not there to see it.
"Daniel!"
Out of the darkness came a familiar voice.
"Simone!"
The two friends grasped each other's arms.
"Where is he, Simone?"
"He has gone."
"Gone? They're going to crown him king."
"I know, but he has gone. We pleaded with him. But he told us to hold back the crowd, and then he went, with Simone and James and John."
"Where?"
"Back into the hills somewhere."
"We must go after him. Hurry!"
"We will not find him. He said that no one was to follow him."
Daniel rocked back from the words as from a wall. Baffled, he stood quivering, his eyes straining ahead. Where could he look in the darkness? Numb with disappointment, he stared at his friend. Then he realized that all around him, like a bonfire that had leaped too high, the exultation was dying down. Shouts of joy were giving way to cries of anger. Like Daniel, the people could not believe that Jesus had gone. He must be hiding, waiting to be coaxed. Here and there, fierce sudden arguments broke out. If the man wanted to be king, why didn't he stand up and act like a king? Women threaded through the crowd, searching out their men and urging them to go home. Slowly the tide turned back down the hill.
"Come," said Simone quietly. "You can spend the night with me."
"Simone, why?"
Daniel burst out.
"They would have given him a crown."
"I don't know. Perhaps it is not time."
"When will there ever be a better time?"
"That is for him to choose."
"But will he? What does he want? What sort of man is he anyway?"
Simone looked back at him. In the darkness, his eyes suddenly blazed.
I believe he is the Messiah, sent from God, he said.
Daniel felt a chill along his spine.
Has he said so?
Not to me. Perhaps to those three. I think Simone knows.
Then why would he not be king?
I have told you, I don't know.
If he is the Messiah, how soon will he lead us against the enemy?
Simone walked on for a time without answering. Finally, he spoke.
He will never lead us against Rome, Daniel. I have given up all hope of that.
The quiet words had the force of a blow. Daniel had his answer at last. Yoel had tried to tell him, and Thacia, even Jesus himself. Now Simone had confirmed the doubt that all these months had blocked the way between him and the man from Nazareth.
Then why do you stay with him?
All the boy's bitterness broke through the reproach.
Where else could I go?
Simone answered.
What has he offered you that is worth more than Israel's freedom?
He has offered me the kingdom.
Daniel's anger was rising. When do you think you'll have this kingdom?
You will not understand this, said Simone. In a way, I have it already.
That's fine.
The boy's scorn was close to tears.
You have the kingdom. You can shut your eyes while all around you.
I have not shut my eyes, said Simone. I know well enough that nothing in Israel has changed. But I know that it will be, even if I never live to see it with my own eyes.
Listen to me, Daniel, he went on.
You've seen him caring for those people, the ones so low that no one, not I or anyone else, cared what happened to them. When I see that, I know that the God of Israel has not forgotten us. Or why would he have sent Jesus to them, instead of to the rich and the learned? Like a shepherd, he says, who will not let any of his sheep be lost? I'm a poor man and ignorant, but I know now that with a God like that, I am safe.
Daniel stood staring at his friend. Simone had lost his senses altogether. Safe? Jesus has put you all in danger.
Simone's voice was steady. Jesus has taught us that we must not be afraid of the things that men can do to us.
Suppose they put chains on all of you and drag you off to prison.
He says that the only chains that matter are fear and hate, because they chain our souls. If we do not hate anyone and do not fear anyone, then we are free.
Free? In chains. Simone, you know what they could do to you. How could you possibly not be afraid?
I don't say I am not afraid, said Simone, but Jesus is not, and he is the hope of Israel.
What has he done to prove it? How do you know you're not risking your life for nothing?
We can never know, Simone answered slowly. God hides the future from man's eyes. We are forced to choose, not knowing. I have chosen Jesus.
This was his chance tonight. Do you think he will ever do anything now?
I don't know what he will do. It is enough for me that he has promised.
It is not enough for me, Daniel cried. Promises are easy. They are nothing but words. I want a leader who will make his promises good.
He flung himself away from Simone and stumbled ahead into the darkness. He could not see his way, but he knew that from now on, he was alone. There was no friend to fight beside him. There was no leader to follow. There was nothing left to him but his hatred and his vow.
24. The Bronze Bow.
Spring burst over Galilee. The curtain of rain drew back from a clear, brilliant blue sky. The rich green slopes dropped down to a gentle sea. Flowers flowed along the roadways, trickling through every crevice in the rocky banks, splashing the gray mud walls, spraying from thatched roofs, washing in a wave of color up to the door of the house. But the door was shut against them.
Inside the shop, Daniel worked steadily with a grim, averted face. In the gloom of the house, Leia sat, her hands idle in her lap. Dust gathered on the threads of the loom. They were both alike, Daniel thought, turning his back on the blossoming roadway. They could not learn to hope again. Yet he was still stronger than Leia. While she had lost everything, purpose remained to him. His hatred was as strong as ever, so strong that unless he found some outlet for it soon, it would destroy him. He was like a man imprisoned in a pit, raging and helpless. If he were free, he could find a band of zealots. They existed everywhere in Galilee. Men spoke of them furtively. In some village, in some cave in the wilderness, men gathered and made ready, and they would welcome him. But he was chained to his forge in an endless round of work to keep alive a girl who was indifferent that she lived. And even if he found a band, how could he recognize a man whom he could trust? How could he be sure that he would not be duped again? He trains my hands for war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. What use were his strong hands? God did not mean the bow of bronze for him. In the first month of spring, Leia was betrayed by the one remaining thing to which she still reached out. The little goat failed her. The kid, which was born in a dare, was puny and brought only the lowest price, and when it was taken from her, the goat drooped. The milk she gave scarcely provided Leia with a cupful once a day. There came a morning when the little creature could not stand on its feet. Daniel looked at it with dismay, remembering that goats were subject to a peculiar fever. He brought it into the house and tried to coax it to eat. The little goat huddled beside Leia, as unresponsive as its mistress. 2 mornings later, it was dead. He thought at first that Leia refused to eat from grief, but he soon recognized that she too was feverish. She lay on the rush mat, her eyes glazed and unaware, her cheeks flushed, her lips parched. From time to time, she cried out in terror. She seemed to be wandering in a distant country, peopled with dreadful shapes he could not even imagine. By the next morning, he saw that she was very ill. The physician, loath at first to come, looked down at her and shook his head. There was too little blood in that thin body already, he said, laying aside the bottle of leeches. He left a concoction of rue and departed, with a resigned shrug of his shoulders and a gentle pity in the wise eyes behind their wrinkled lids. I cannot work today. My sister has the fever, Daniel told a customer, and bolted the shop door as the man backed away. Word must have gone quickly through the village, because no other customer came to trouble him. He sat beside Leia's mat, bewildered. One by one, they had all left him, everyone who had touched his life. Roche, Samson, Yoel, Thasia, Simone, Jesus. Now Leia was slipping away. With Leia's death, he would be altogether free. But freedom seemed suddenly a terror of emptiness, and he had nothing to fill it but hatred. Leia too, he thought dully, must be avenged. In the stillness, the words came back to him. Can you repay love with vengeance? Leia had loved him with a simple, trustful heart, as Samson had loved him. But vengeance was all he had to give. It was better than nothing. Leia, like Samson, had perished by the sword he had meant for Rome. And like Samson, she would not leave a single person on earth save himself who would know or care. Then he remembered that this was not true. Thasia would care. Sometime during the day, he became convinced that Thasia should know. There was nothing that she could do for Leia now, but he knew that she would care. How could he let her know? He remembered the message that Simone had sent him almost a year ago. Rummaging in his shop, he found a bit of broken pottery and scratched with a nail the same message Simone had sent. Leia is dying. Yoktan sat outside the shop, half-heartedly filing down a set of nails.
He had no more than glimpsed the girl who lay dying, but the heaviness inside the house seeped through the door and made him uneasy. He was glad enough for an errand to do. Daniel gave him the directions to the house of Hezron in Capernaum and told him to leave the message with the porter at the door. Yoktan did not return. 3 times a day, Daniel went to the village well to get water, using it recklessly to bathe Leia's hands and face. He came and went with his head bent, looking at no one, speaking to no one. On the 2nd day, as he came slowly back along the street, he saw the Roman soldier Marcus standing before his house. He stood still, his legs suddenly weak. A red mist blurred his vision. His arms trembled till he could scarcely hold the water jug. Here, in this one hated figure, was concentrated all the misery of his life. With all the strength of his being, he wanted to hurl himself at the Roman boy, to feel the throat between his hands, to hear the life gasping out. But something held him back. He could not kill the Roman while Leia lay dying inside the house. He would have to wait. Marcus stepped forward, to stand between him and the door, and Daniel was forced to stop. He could not prevent the soldier from speaking to him, but he turned his face away. When, against his will, he had to see why no words came, he saw the boy's face was contorted in an effort to speak. "I have heard that your sister is ill," he stammered. "How does she today?" Daniel spat on the ground. He charged forward so fiercely that Marcus involuntarily stepped out of the way and let him enter his house. On the doorstep, Daniel turned. "What is it to you if another Jew is dying?" he snarled. On the 3rd day of Yoktan's absence, Daniel came back from the well slowly, his limbs dragging with weariness, heavy with dread that Leia's anguished breathing might have stopped while he was gone. He took no notice of the soldier who stood across the road as he had stood for the past 2 days. Every hour that the boy had off duty, he spent simply standing there in the blazing sunshine, with his eyes on the house. This time, however, Daniel saw that the Roman was crossing the road and waiting for him, as he had before, between the road and the door. "I must speak to you," Marcus said as Daniel halted. Daniel did not look up. "You hate me," the boy said. "I understand your hate. I am German. My people were conquered by Rome." "You serve them," said Daniel with scorn. The soldier shrugged. "All of my tribe are fighters. At the end of my term, I will be a Roman citizen." "You should have died first." The boy flushed under his smooth, tanned skin. "I tell you, I understand your hate," he snapped. "But I command you to listen to me." Daniel said nothing, waiting. "My cohort is transferred. Tomorrow I leave for Corinth. I pray the gods I never set eyes on your country again." Daniel's quick burst of fury died back in helplessness. Even vengeance was snatched from him. Now he would never feel this man's life between his hands. "Your sister was the only good thing in this rotting land. I will never see her again. Even if she were not a Jew, a legionary is forbidden to marry. I want to see her before I go. One moment. That is all." Thunderstruck, Daniel looked directly at the boy before him. That a Roman should bend his pride to speak so to a Jew. Then the very humbleness of his request maddened him the more. His contempt overflowed. "If you could save my sister's life, I would not profane our house," he said. "I would rather let her die. Understand this. If you try to walk through that door, I will kill you." Marcus was still a soldier. His face went white, his eyes glinted with steel, and his hand moved of its own accord to his side. The 2 young men stood eye to eye, neither one giving way. Then the Roman heeled about and strode away, his shoulders rigid. "If she is dead," Daniel thought, "I will go after him now. I will have that at least." Leia still lived, but barely. She did not know that he had returned.
She lay silent, with no strength to cry out against the demons. She had surrendered to them utterly. In the afternoon heat, Daniel must have slept a little. Sleeping and waking were all one endless sameness. But a sound brought his head up, and he saw the door of his house opening. Framed in it, against the sunlight, stood Jesus in his white robe. Dazed, Daniel struggled to his feet. Jesus moved through the door, touching with his fingers the mezuzah as he passed. Behind him came Thashia. Jesus did not speak. He moved quietly to Leah's mat and stood looking down at her. Thashia came swiftly to Daniel's side.
"We were away," she whispered, "with Yoel in Jerusalem. Yoktan just found me this morning."
Daniel scarcely heard her. He saw only that luminous figure. Jesus had come. He struggled to believe. Jesus had come to his house. He wanted to cry out to him, to go down on his knees, but he was afraid. Something about the quietness of Jesus held him silent. Jesus sat down beside Leah and motioned for Daniel and Thashia to sit also at the other side of the room. Then he bent his head and covered his face with his hand and seemed to rest. "If I could speak to him," Daniel thought with longing. "If I could tell him it is my fault that I have done this to Leah." Although he held his breath and made no sound, Jesus raised his head and his eyes met Daniel's. There was no need to speak. Jesus knew. He understood about Leah. He knew that Daniel had rejected him. His eyes, searching and full of pity, looked deep into the boy's and saw the bitterness and the hatred and the betrayed hopes and the loneliness. And then he smiled. Unable to endure that smile, Daniel bent his head. Suddenly, with a longing that was more than he could bear, he wanted to stop fighting against this man. He knew that he would give everything he possessed in life to follow Jesus. Even his vow? He tried to cling again to the words of David that had always strengthened him. "He trains my hands for war." But Jesus said that the victory was God's promise. He called men to make ready their hearts and minds instead. Was it possible that only love could bend the bow of bronze? He sat trembling, glimpsing a new way that he would never see clearly or understand. "We can never know," Simone had said. "We have to choose, not knowing." To know Jesus would be enough. Almost with the thought, the terrible weight was gone. In its place, a strength and sureness and a peace he had never imagined flowed around him and into his mind and heart. After a long time, he felt Thashia's hand close over his own. He raised his head and saw tears on her face.
"Look,"
she whispered. He had forgotten Leah. Now, seeing how still she lay, he thought that she must have died. Jesus had risen and stood looking down at her. Then, as Daniel watched, he saw her eyelids move and lift falteringly. The blue eyes were blank, as though she came from a deep sleep. She looked up into the master's face, and slowly her eyes filled with wonder.
"Jesus?"
she breathed. Into Jesus' face came the old smile with which he had so often looked at the children who crowded around him.
"It is all right,"
she whispered.
"It is all right,"
Jesus answered. "Do not be afraid." With a sob, Daniel stumbled forward to his knees, hiding his face, feeling the tears he had never known since his childhood. Not on the night of his father's death, or in all the years between, hot and liberating against his hands. He thought he felt a touch on his shoulder. When he lifted his head, Jesus was gone. He saw Thashia, her own tears shining on her cheeks, her eyes like stars.
"Daniel,"
Leia said, very faintly. Not daring to speak, he reached out and touched his sister's hand.
"I know how she felt," she whispered. "The girl, Harris's daughter, you told me about."
"I know too," he said humbly.
He heard Thasha catch her breath and turned and looked into her eyes. He knew he was not worthy of the gift he saw there, but he knew that at last he was free to offer her all that he had in return. In that one brief look, they made a new vow together.
"How light it is,"
Leia murmured, "even with Jesus gone."
Gone.
In sudden realization, Daniel sprang to the door. He could see Jesus far down the street, already half hidden by the people who always gathered wherever he went.
"I must go after him," he cried. "Before anything else, I must thank him."
He flung himself out the doorway and stopped. Across the street, the Roman soldier stood alone under the broiling sun. Haltingly, Daniel walked, not after Jesus, but across the road till he stood before the boy. He had to try twice before the words would come. "My sister will get well," he said, his voice harsh. "The fever has left her." A quick guttural sound burst from the soldier. Daniel looked away. Who could believe that a Roman? "I think she would want to say goodbye to you," he said. The soldier waited, not understanding. Daniel looked down the road and caught the white flash of Jesus' robe. Then he straightened his shoulders. "Will you come into our house?" he asked.
This has been an HMH Audio production of The Bronze Bow, written by Elizabeth George Spear, read by Pat Young, produced by Greg Cooler, directed by Alana Dvorak, recorded by Eric Searle at Listen Up Audiobooks, post-production by Ryan Jones at Listen Up Audiobooks. Text copyright 1961 by Elizabeth George Spear. Audio production copyright 2019 by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt Publishing Company. All rights reserved. For information about permission to reproduce selections from this audiobook, please contact trade.permissions@hmhco.com. To learn more about our books, ebooks, and audiobooks, please visit hmhbooks.com. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.